Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce Vesper, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter or two from Tales of Al, The Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox, and if we have some time, I'll be reading the Times Special Edition on How Dogs Think, Inside the Canine Mind. We're going to start today's readings with Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. In the last reading, we learned that Lynn swam with Moss and then acted as if she were drowning. Moss then rescued her, and everybody cheered for the dog. Chapter 9, Dragonfly Freestyle. As we started to walk into the water, a cobalt blue dragonfly darted around us and circled Donatella and Al. Its four gossamer wings turned iridescent blue in the sunshine. It looked like a magical creature. Flying acrobatically like a tiny biplane, the dragonfly altered the movement of each of its wings and flew straight up, straight down, side to side, hovered, and moved back, then moved forward and circled again. The dragonfly seemed like it was trying to decide what to do. It was strange. I had often seen dragonflies fly in pairs and sometimes in swarms when they were hunting and feeding. I had heard about some of them that flew thousands of miles across the Indian Ocean, but this dragonfly was flying solo. Finally, spreading its wings, it lighted on Donatella's shoulder. Al stared at the beautiful blue bug while it rested. The dragonfly's eyes were so large, they covered most of its head, and it looked like it was studying. Suddenly, it flapped its wings and lifted off. Al barked loudly and lunged for it, but the dragonfly spun quickly, dropped, and skimmed the water's surface. Al continued to bark as it flew across the lake. Donatella tried to quiet Al, but she was agitated, and then she saw Mas, Ferruccio, and me starting to swim offshore. She was upset and desperately wanted to join us, but she had not been behaving well and would not be rewarded with a swim right away. Al needed to stay on shore while Moss was working with Ferruccio and me. Moss swam between us as Ferruccio and I swam head-up freestyle. I felt uncomfortable wearing the life jacket. My arms were not able to stretch out, but still it was wonderful to feel my body moving through the warm aqua-blue liquid. This is nothing in the world as glorious as swimming. Ferruccio's stroke was smooth and relaxed. He was comfortable in the water. I watched Moss. She was as amazingly agile as any swimmer. I had my goggles with me and asked Ferruccio if I could put them on and dive underwater to watch Moss swim. I had never seen a Newfoundland's underwater pool. I tried to swim ahead so I could dive under as Moss was swimming toward me, but Moss immediately noticed my change in speed and she pulled stronger to stay beside me. Ferruccio had to call her so she would continue swimming with him as he slowed our pace. Taking a deep breath, I dove deep and swam under her. She was so aware of everything around her. I wondered if she could feel my air bubbles on her toes. I tried not to let any bubbles escape. I did not want to disturb Moss and have her change her stroke or speed. The water was fairly clear, a light milky blue. I could see Moss's front paws doing the shortened breaststroke pull. It was so strong, and she was kicking equally strongly with her back legs. I watched her front paws again. They looked like huge paddles. The black skin webbing between her large toes enabled her to open her paws and capture so much water with each pull. I also loved looking at her churning hind legs that powered her through the water. She was designed by nature to be hydrodynamic. The water flowed easily over her body. She did not fight it. She just moved through it. It was a beautiful thing to see. When I surfaced, I was smiling. I told Ferruccio that I wished I had hands like Ma's paws. I would be able to swim so much faster. He grinned and said it would help me on the water, but webbed hands might be difficult to use on land. We swam until we were a little more than 50 meters from the shore. Ferruccio said he would have Ma's do the dolphin system and tow him to shore. Then I would signal her to come get me. I asked Ferruccio if she minded working with different people. He said they encourage it. It gives Moss and the other dogs and owners more experience. And sometimes, if an owner is having difficulty teaching a dog something, another person can help. I said this reminded me of swimming on a swim team. Sometimes the coach would try to help me make a stroke adjustment, and I did not quite understand what he was saying, but a teammate would demonstrate something for me or say something slightly different, and I would understand and be able to make the correction. Moss towed Ferruccio to shore. I lifted my arms and dropped them on the water. Moss turned around and sprinted toward me. Al wanted to come too. She was trying to break free from Donatella. Ferruccio said something to Al, and she seemed to calm down. Moss moved in closer to me this time. She knew I was not afraid of her. She circled and watched me to make sure I grabbed the handle on her harness. When she started swimming, she felt the resistance of my body in the water. I loved the ride. But this time I decided to do something different. I let go of the handle. Moss stopped. She turned, swam around me, and presented the handle. I held on for about 10 meters and let go again. She stopped, turned, circled faster, and presented the handle again. This time she looked worried. I grabbed the handle and she started pulling faster this time. When we were about 10 meters from shore, I let go again. She seemed annoyed with me. She was more insistent when she presented the harness this time. When I held on, she towed me until my stomach touched the sand. When we climbed onto the beach, she did a little happy dance. Curious about the way Moss responded, I told Ferruccio what had happened. He explained that Moss had been trained for this. Sometimes the handle slipped from a person's hand because the water was rough or they were tired. Moss would continue circling a person until she knew the person was holding on to the harness. By circling back, Moss gave them another chance to be saved. Al was still waiting for her. Ferruccio and Moss swam out to the deep water. Ferruccio held on to Al's harness, and Moss swam beside them. Ferruccio alternated between the two dogs, and everything seemed to be going smoothly. Donatella was standing beside me, watching Al and smiling. For the first time since we met, she was relaxing. Al was doing what she was supposed to do. She was rescuing Ferruccio. But everything changed when 5 mallard ducks landed on the lake. The ducks were swimming about 20 meters from Al. They were distracting her. She heard them quacking and saw them pecking at one another. 2 of the ducks suddenly turned. They lifted their wings, pressed them down against the water. That lifted them from the lake, and they continued flapping their wings so that they could run across the water's surface with their webbed feet, gain speed, and then fly. Quickly, Al turned and started to chase them. She was heading out to the deep water. Somehow, Ferruccio and Moss managed to sprint and catch her before she caught the ducks. When we returned to shore, Al's head was hanging low as she climbed from the water. She knew from Donatella's grimace that she was upset with her. Donatella called her and she obeyed, but Al had lapsed. Donatella said that training Al was not as simple, fast, or as straightforward as it seemed. It looked like the patience of Job. Donatella immediately snapped a leash onto Al's harness. The puppies were nearby. They had finished their workouts and were running up to Al. She was calm and gentle as she nuzzled them, even though they were so unruly. Other dogs joined the group. Almost everyone was happy. There was a feeding of expectations in the air. Owners were watching the dogs. One Labrador twisted her body to one side and lifted her head. Someone shouted, "Guarda quello! Look at that!" Everyone turned to watch. Nothing happened. A golden retriever shifted to one side and turned his head. "Guarda quella!" Everyone watched. Nothing happened. A yellow Labrador turned his head and shook and shook and shook, and the water from her fur coat flew into the air, and it went everywhere. It hit the puppies, the dogs, their owners, and it set off a chain reaction of shaking dogs. When the Newfoundland dogs started shaking, people were laughing and ducking and running out of the way. The spray was hitting everyone and everything. People were watching to see which dog would start the next chain reaction. The splash from the dogs' coats was like confetti. The dogs' owners and instructors were celebrating the swim, training, the day, the time, together, and their lives. The owners praised their dogs, scooped up their puppies, and dried them more thoroughly with towels. Dogs and people were staring to go off in a different direction. Donatella led Al to the car to get a bowl of water. A young blonde woman with delicate features and a dainty yellow golden retriever walked over to me. She said she came to say hello. She was aware that I was there to observe water rescue dog training. I told her that her golden retriever looked pretty. She had two perfect pink bows on her head just above her ears. The woman explained that since there were so many golden retrievers in the water, it was easier to see her dog when she was wearing the bows. She hoped I enjoyed spending the morning with them. I had a fantastic time, I told her. She was happy about that, but she was concerned about something. She said Donatella was a top-notch trainer, but it was unfortunate Al was so difficult. When the other dogs were working, she was in a different world, watching bees pollinating daisies in the grass and butterflies fluttering around flowers. She explained that she had tried to help train Al, as had other members of the team. They had worked hard with her, but Al was a big problem. She did not pay attention. Other dogs did, and they learned. Some were fast learners and gained their water rescue dog certification in 1 year. But Al was such a poor student, she might never own a certificate. Donatella and Al were approaching. Worse, Al is a terrible embarrassment to Donatella. I don't know why she has kept her so long. She is impossible, she whispered, then said, Arrivederci. See you later. She walked away with her perfectly behaved golden retriever, wearing two pink bows. Chapter 10. Cheese and Vinegar. Would you like to join us for refreshments? Donatella asked. Oh, yes, I would love to, I said. The day reminded me of the many times I swam with friends and how after a long workout we would go for a meal together. We were fatigued and famished. Our hunger intensified our sense of taste and smell. It heightened the way food felt in our mouths. The texture of food changed. It felt smoother, crunchier, and creamier. Salty, sweet, sour, bitter, tart, and spicy flavors were elevated. Food tasted delicious and robust. We ate and relaxed. We joked and laughed. Sometimes we discussed our workouts, how we were doing, and what we needed to do to improve, and what the coach thought of us. We discussed what was happening in our lives and in the larger world. We were filled with ideas after long hours with our heads submerged in the water with no one to talk to. We were eager to share our thoughts. The food, conversation, and time filled us up, and we felt happy and replenished. Donatella and Al led the way through the park along a path between ancient pines. The trees were more than 30 meters high, and their branches were wide and bushy. Dark green needles shaded us from the searing afternoon sun. A gentle breeze stirred the trees, so they started swaying, and as Al walked below them, her swaying bushy tail mirrored their motions. The breeze carried the scent of pine, wild geranium, and the oily, sweet smell of wet dog. We reached a parking lot. This was the first time I had been to a tailgate party for dogs. People were taking containers of food and putting them on the back of their cars. Some school members had spread colored blankets on the ground and were sitting down in the small group. The dogs knew the routine. They lay down on the blankets anywhere they chose. Some stayed with their owners. Some went to see friends. Some knew where to go to get special treats. Al was lying down and sniffing the air, her large black nostrils flaring. Donatella reached over to pet her. Her real talent is to use her nose, and that is not a characteristic that most Newfoundlands have. I've always thought that if Al didn't work in the water, she would have a great career searching for truffles. Donatella was setting a large bowl of water beside Al, who was panting and drooling heavily. She looked uncomfortable. Bob, one of the instructors, pulled a large red cloth napkin from his pocket and wiped Al's mouth. Al looked up as if she was thanking him, and Bob stroked her on the top of her head. Al wagged her tail. They were good friends. She's a difficult dog, but she has much promise, Bob said with certainty. At least Bob is hopeful, I thought. Bob said that every owner carried these napkins. If a dog drooled, anyone in the group would wipe the dog's face. Most people are disgusted by dog slobber, but there in the park no one seemed to mind. While people were sitting and talking, I watched them reach out occasionally and carefully wipe a drooling dog's face and return the cloth to their pocket. I had never seen a community of people taking care of one another's dogs this way. Bob asked if I knew why Newfoundland dogs drooled. He explained that they had loose lips, that they didn't seal closed. The dogs were bred to help fishermen off Newfoundland pull their fishing nets in from the Gulf of St. Lawrence and the Atlantic Ocean. The dogs seemed to need to have loose lips so that they could breathe while they were holding a rope or a net in their mouth and pulling it into shore. Bob explained that Ferruccio and other owners dreamed of one day traveling to Newfoundland with their trained dogs to do water rescues. It's always good to have a big dream and work toward it, I told him. Bob opened a bag. Inside was an enormous chunk of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, a hard, pale yellow cheese, often grated and served on pasta plates. Bob carefully pulled out and unwrapped a knife and offered me a piece of the cheese. I've never seen a Parmigiano Reggiano look like that. I've only seen it grated. I like it a lot, but did not know you could eat it as a slice, I said, astonished. This cheese is different from the cheese you buy in the United States. In the United States, some manufacturers add cellulose to their cheese. In Italy, the cheese is pure. This Parmigiano Reggiano had been aged for 24 months to give it the best of flavors, he explained. Now I knew why the dogs and friends were staying close. This was all part of the after-training ritual. Bob handed me the piece of cheese. The aroma was much more intense than any Parmigiano Reggiano cheese I had ever had. Bob was slicing the cheese for everyone and every dog. The people were oohing and aahing as they nibbled their pieces. The dogs gobbled their slices and stared at Bob and wagged their tails, begging for more. The cheese was delicious. It tasted nutty and fruity and salty and a little granular. I stepped in line behind the dogs, hoping to be given more. Bob laughed, and after giving the dogs more samples, he handed me another piece. "Do you like it?" he asked. "It's amazing." He grinned with pride and said he traveled to a gourmet cheese shop outside of Milan to find this special cheese. But it was worth it. He and his friends, furry and without fur, all greatly appreciated and enjoyed it. Bob's friend, a taller man with brown hair and a well-trimmed beard, carefully opened a small, dark, bulb-shaped bottle and asked me, "Have you ever had Parmigiano Reggiano with balsamic vinegar?" "I've never tried it," I said. He explained that they had added balsamic vinegar to the cheese and it was unique. It was from Modena in northern Italy and made from the latest harvest of Trebbiano and Lambrusco grapes. The grape juice, skins, seeds, and stems were pressed, cooked until they became concentrated, and then left to ferment and age in oak, chestnut, cherry, mulberry, and juniper barrels to create the vinegar's flavor. As the balsamic aged, some of the liquid evaporated, and the vinegar became thicker. The older the vinegar, the more flavorful and precious. Bob tore off a gold label from the small bottle. He pulled the cork, smelled the liquid, and smiled slowly. Closing his eyes, he took in a deep breath and handed the bottle to a friend to smell the vinegar. He did the same and said something with great appreciation, and then handed the bottle to the next friend. The bottle was passed from friend to friend, with everyone exclaiming how wonderful it smelled. Bob said, "This balsamic vinegar has been aged for 25 years. It is very special. There are much younger vinegars, but this is considered the best. Fine balsamic vinegars are expensive. Would you like to try some on the cheese?" He poured a dot of the precious dark brown syrup on a small slice of cheese, and then he handed it to me. He suggested that I taste the vinegar first with just the tip of my tongue, so I could experience the flavor all on its own. I did. The vinegar had a silky texture, and the flavor exploded in my mouth. It was complex, sweet, smoky, and a little acidic. It had notes of chocolate, cherry, and fig. "Do you like it?" he asked. "It's delicious, unlike anything I've ever tasted," I said, again astonished. When I tasted the balsamic vinegar with the Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, the flavors changed and made a new combination. The cheese mellowed and became nuttier, and the vinegar tasted sweeter and fruitier. I have never thought vinegar could taste like that. A small woman in her 40s with shoulder-length black hair and deep brown eyes appeared with a platter of what looked like biscotti, the crunchy Italian cookies often made with almonds and simple flavors like lemon and allspice or hazelnut. Italians frequently dip biscotti in espresso or in a sweet wine to soften the cookie and absorb the flavors of the liquid. The cheese and vinegar had teased my appetite. I imagined how good the biscotti would taste. The woman explained that the biscotti were homemade, full of vitamins and healthy ingredients, and they did not contain sugar. They were made with care and with love. She offered me the platter. I took one. On cue, the dogs circled around us, and then I realized that the biscotti were not for me. They were for the dogs. She showed me how to instruct the dogs to sit, and then I doled out one biscotti to each happy animal. The biscottis were hard and crunchy, and the dogs looked at the woman and me with large brown and golden eyes, hoping for some more. I was beginning to understand that eating in Italy was special. People paid great attention to detail, to age, flavor, and taste. They carried over the same awareness to their dogs. They had quality time with their dogs when they were learning, exercising, bonding, eating, and having fun together. Despite my limited Italian, I understood that they were happy to have me there, and they were gracious. I saw their smiles, heard their laughter, and how much they loved being with their dogs, and how they were eager to share what they loved with me. I was grateful for the day of the sharing time with other people from different worlds who welcomed me into their group and gave me insight into what they loved and how they lived. These two chapters come from Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox. Next week, we'll read Chapter 11, Biscotti Lion Dog. Our next reading comes from Time's special edition, How Dogs Think, Inside the Canine Mind. And this article is titled, Dogs at the Extremes, One Species but Lots of Models. The biggest, smallest, smartest, and, well, not so smart. The world is home to millions of dogs here and are some of the outliers and record holders. Courtney Mifsud writes the article. The smartest of dogs, well, all breeds are able to be trained, but the energetic Border Collie, a type of herding dog, is considered the smartest. According to Stanley Coren, who wrote the seminal text on animal intelligence, these working dogs can learn a command in under 5 seconds and obey it at least 95% of the time. The dumbest dog, well, although it's unfair to deem them dumb, the case of training has come to define animal intelligence. Like many sight sounds, the Afghan hound can be neurotic, sensitive, and aloof. Firm, consistent, and patient training will help you school this canine diva. That's the Afghan hound. And the longest tongue dog? Well, the current holder of the uncoveted but still impressive honor goes to Mochi, a rescue St. Bernard from South Dakota. But the all-time record belonged to Brandy, a boxer whose tongue more than doubled Mochi's at 17 inches long. A kiss from Brandy, though well-intentioned, was surely an untidy thing. Well, who's the loudest dog? Charlie, a golden retriever from Australia, who set the record for the loudest bark. Measured at 113.1 decibels, his bark is 42 times as large as an ordinary conversation and the same volume as a live rock concert. He doesn't bark at home at all, really, says Charlie's owner. He's really quite quiet. Now, the biggest dog... In 2016, Great Dane Freddy was deemed the tallest dog in the world at 7 feet 6 inches upright. Freddy's owner, Claire Stoneman, who tops out at 5 foot 4, acknowledges that his size presents challenges. If he wants to turn after a dog, I wouldn't be able to stop him. And the oldest dog in the world? Well, that's Bluey. A cattle herding dog born in 1910 lived for 29 years and 5 months, far surpassing the 8 to 15 year lifespan of dogs. Bluey's size. Maggie, an Australian sheepdog, made headlines in 2016 when she passed away at a reported 30 years old. But Maggie could never formally wear the longevity crown. At some point during her very long life, her owner misplaced her paperwork. A dog's 5 senses are just like ours, but not quite. Touch. The sense of touch is used immediately at birth when puppies are cleaned by their mothers through licks and nuzzles, which may register with them the way the hug does for a human. A dog's paw contains nerve endings that can help it navigate its movements. A dog's muzzle is rich in nerve endings, and the nose thus serves both an olfactory and tactile exploratory function. And what about taste? Dogs don't excel at taste. People have around 9,000 taste buds on their tongue. Dogs have only 2,000. Of course, a limited taste range doesn't mean dogs aren't open to enjoying new things. As anyone who has lived with a dog knows, if something is edible, and sometimes even if it's not, they're going to try it. The problem is that they can't always handle the rich foods that we eat. Chocolate, garlic, coffee, and onions are thought to be harmful to dogs' digestion. Scent. The area of the dog's brain dedicated to scent is thought to be 40 times as large as that of humans. Not only that, dogs have hundreds of millions of scent receptors in their nose versus a mere 400 for humans. And dogs smell continuously while they breathe, unlike humans who smell only on the inhale. Well, all this wonderful information about dogs comes from the Times special edition, How Dogs Think, Inside the Canine Mind. That brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce Vesper for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.